Welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Tresidder from NHS Somerset, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, NHS Somerset Clinical Lead for Mental Health.
And we're really pleased today to welcome Monty. Monty, tell us about yourself a bit.
It's lovely to be here. I'm a session musician from Bristol. Been working in Somerset and surrounding areas for the last, since 2018, I think I've been a full-time musician. And that kind of incorporates everything from teaching to working in schools, working with musicians, just pretty much anything you can imagine to do with music. I've done that.
So today we're going to talk about the power of music, and it really is interesting, music, because it does something very deep for the soul in many of our experiences. But how do we quantify that? What's going on? What's really happening?
Gosh, so much. An awful lot. Quantifying that for the soul, what an amazing question. Very hard to answer. Because we all engage with it in very different ways. Whether you're learning from absolute scratch or engaging with it after years and years of playing, it does completely different things to the brain, from improvisation to learning to the tune. But for the most part, I think it's engaging in some kind of mindful practice. You find a song that you really, really love, and suddenly you find yourself drawn into this kind of explosive, imaginative world. And that's a beautiful thing, really.
Interesting. We're all in the flow of life, and we use our right brain to be part of the flow of life and to understand it. And we use our left brain to understand it, left brain to analyze and use logic and reason. And I've heard it said that language divides and is probably more a left brain function, but music unites our brain. And certainly neurophysiology, lots of different bits of the brain will light up with PET scans when you analyze what's happening in the brain for somebody playing music or listening to music.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, I remember reading a study about improvisation, and jazz pianists were put inside of a CT scan, brain scan, to see what happens. And for the most part, it was, I think, is it the prefrontal cortex that deals with like self-narrative? That's incredibly engaged and bright. So it's as if you're talking, you're expressing something about yourself. And the center for language, I think, stops, which is fascinating, really, because that's really what's happening while we're listening to it. We're projecting ourselves into the music and experiencing almost therapeutically a kind of extension of our own life.
And I'm fascinated that you say that it's a type of mindfulness, because although we can just have music on in the background where it's around us, to me, the very best way to listen to music is to give it that 100% focus and to kind of go on the emotional journey that the person who wrote the piece of music, whether you're listening to it or playing it or singing it or whatever. And you do get totally lost in that world, don't you? And the emotions are very real.
Absolutely. You guys must have talked quite a bit about active listening in the past, that kind of radical type of thinking where you're not trying to respond or you're not trying to get something out of it. You're just being fully in the moment and engaging with it so that something more natural and human can come out. And that's exactly what you're doing when you're listening to. If you can get into that state, as you said, you can listen to it in the background.
And David, our producer, has joined us because you also have your own musical journey, David. What do you want to say?
Oh, yeah, thank you. I know I've gate-crashed the party today because we're going to have to do some technical stuff in a minute with Monty's kindly provided us some songs to listen to and things as well. So I thought it would be easier if I'm just here for the journey too. But yeah, no, I'm not to the same level as Monty, but I sort of play bass guitar in a rudimentary way. And I've been a singer in a couple of bands and stuff like that and done a little tour of the Czech Republic in my youth and things like that, but not anything massive and certainly not very successful, not as talented as you, Monty, from the sounds of it. But I was just really curious, Monty. I think Peter touched on this a minute ago, that music is a personal thing that comes from inside us. It's a creative outlet. You are a session musician as well, so actually sometimes you're not doing that. You're sort of doing more of a job within a recording. I imagine sometimes it feels like you're still bringing your own expression to that. What's your personal journey? How did you get to do what you do today?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say it's kind of like a job, but the second that I engage that kind of thought pattern is the second that I am no longer doing my job very well. I'm sure you guys have come to that point where you know what you should say, and you know what the evidence and the research is, but when you focus too much on that, you lose that element of connectivity. But it's a journey. You know, when I was very young, very ADHD, terrible at focusing in school, kicked out of my schools, you know, not a very good experience. Had a very hard time socializing. And the first time that I experienced music, I was in the back of a bus. I think I must have been 7 on a school trip to France. And this song came on. And as we were talking about earlier, completely engaged in it, taken away to this other imaginative place. And ever since then, when I engage with music, because I was singing in choirs, I just always wanted to have that feeling again. But it's very hard to hold on to it because of the amount of practice and time that you need to put in. So after putting in that amount of time and learning to accept that I sucked, and you know, that kind of radical self-acceptance where you're listening to yourself, you want to work on it, you want to change and grow. So it's just experiencing that throughout every single point, I think, from joining my first band to doing my first wedding to doing my 50th wedding. It's always the same process.
That's fascinating to hear, Monty. And we all know quite a lot of musicians who have their own mental health struggles and their own emotional problems. And maybe music is a way of getting that out, coping with it. You know, people like Amy Winehouse, obviously, but lots of others as well. So do you think that being involved in making music does help us emotionally?
Oh, 100%. Everything that it can teach you, especially for me, has got to that point with whatever you're struggling with. I think socializing is something that I really struggled with. Having that ability to non-verbally communicate with someone without the fear of, what am I going to say? Like right now, what am I going to say to these folks? I've been every single place that I've been in the world to play music. I've played with people who don't speak English. And there's never a problem. I don't look into their eyes and go, I wonder what they're thinking. Immediately, you're connected with that.
I think that's really, interesting, Monty. And I think that actually, that I heard a description, you probably heard it as well, of jazz described as like, it's sort of like this podcast in a way. It's like it's a conversation between experts on a topic. And like, so that's what a jazz standard kind of informs the topic. And then the musicians who are the experts come in and they bring their own flavor to that conversation, and it's sort of like it's a discussion between the instruments. It's a non-verbal discussion, and that's how it sort of evolves from there. So kind of weirdly, like this, I'm not saying this is a jazz podcast, but I think that there's definitely something there. And I feel like particularly with your journey, when it, like you said, you had ADHD and then you found this and it gave you that kind of that peace and an ability to kind of get lost in that imaginative moment. Do you find music particularly helpful for your ADHD, for like helping to manage it, or what's your experience in that regard?
It's just basic daily therapy. Do you guys meditate at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried TM.
TM for transcendental meditation, wouldn't it be?
Yes. And,
wonderful.
For me, it's time in nature and time listening to music and singing and humming and listening to music in my head. So it's
the only thing I do like that is there's a visualization exercise I like to do sometimes. I heard about where you have to sort of like close your eyes and imagine you're walking through the forest and you find a cave and a cliffside and you go
inside. Yes.
There's like a cup or like a grail, you look in and there's a message in there. It's supposed to be your subconscious writes the message and tells you something. I've not had any luck with that Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I enjoy the journey part of it, the visualization.
I've been trying to visualize myself as a whale. I've been enjoying that lately. Oh.
Excellent.
Just floating through the sea.
The most beautiful animal.
No, that mindfulness element of it, you're practicing to get into a state of mind that is, you know, accepting quiet or whatever emotion that you want to experience. And practicing in any kind of facility does that to you, whether you're just going through scales. You know, you can get into that state of flow where you're not engaging with the wider context of thought. You're trying to get into that moment that feels good.
Interesting. It is about connecting with flow. And I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you were singing in a choir, but what do you play the instruments as well? I can see some keyboards in the background. For our listeners, we're recording on Zoom. Very sorry you can't see this, but I can see at least two keyboards in the background. And I think you're sitting in front of another. But is that your main instrument?
Yeah, piano is definitely the first, but pretty much everything. Because singing, I think singing is what I was, as a choir boy, the first experience with music. And since then, I've only ever engaged with music through that lens. If I'm playing piano, I didn't learn piano in a very classical way. I learned it by going.
Playing what you were singing.
And then just trying to connect it all together. And just using my ear in that kind of way.
Wow, just piano on live for us on this podcast.
It's the same thing. Like trumpet, it's exactly the same thing. You're singing what's in your head. This amazing internalization from meditation. It's in music. It's not just that. You've internalized this world of music that you hear around you every single day, and you're trying to express that.
Interesting. I grew up, my mother used to play Radio 3 all the time, so I was very used to classical and Bach and the structure. But people think that jazz has got no structure. It's very, very structured, and the improvisation happens around that 16-bar sequence or whatever. And I just find that fascinating.
I don't want to minimize the conversation to jazz and classical, because I saw this guy, Chad LB, talking about jazz the other day as this kind of highest art form, because you need to improvise within a set contained. But in Bristol, you know, the musicians on the ground, it's pure improvisation. There's no other structure. No one's calling out chords or has a standardized set of formulae that they are relying on expressing. But even, you know, with a student, like I'm having a wonderful lesson with a student where we're fully improvising and fully engaging. So jazz it is fantastic like that, but it's so much broader. All of music has that element of improvisation. Classical, the early classical pianists would improvise endlessly.
Peter, I know you've got a point, but if you listen to Bach and enough Bach, he does an awful lot of jazz improvisation. Didn't call it that in those days.
That was like the modernist frontier of here are the set of rules that you can engage with. I think it's fantastic. I really don't want to talk about it because I'll end up going off on a massive. But as we're dealing with all these metaphysical questions and the crisis of enlightenment, music's doing the same thing, because we've been given all these rules that we feel that we understand, and now they're kind of splitting apart. A lot of music is breaking these rules in kind of Béla Bartók kind of ways, I can't get I'll end up talking forever if I do that.
I'm now derailing everybody because I'm sharing my screen, because Monty's very, very kindly prepared a couple you played earlier, like Blue Peter, Monty, for us, a different piece of music, and our producer's going to play them in over the top of this so that you get to hear them in their beautiful pristine quality that they should. What we're going to do is we're going to play them and we're going to listen to them now, and then we're going to talk a little bit after each piece about feelings they evoke and maybe Monty's journey on when he's playing them, and sort of to see how that impacts.
They're the honestly well-being. Just little jams. They're nothing serious. They're hopefully not going to break any hearts or anything.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what the listeners say afterwards when they email in. But yeah, so if we're okay, we're ready. I'll play the first piece for us to listen to today, which is called Dream a Little. Are we ready?
Dream a Little, Dream of Me.
Dream a Little, Dream of Me.
Who wrote that? I can't even remember.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, you got it.
All right. So on the count, I'll play us in now. So ready? Here we go.
Very short little extract.
That's just wonderful. Thanks for adding in on that, Monty. My feet were tapping and a great smile came to my face. And it just reminds me that for most of us, music does all sorts of things, but it can evoke various emotions. But for me, that one just brings so much happiness and joy and smile and uplift. How about everyone else?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to ask you, Monty, to me, one of the odd things is I love sad music and it can reduce me to tears. I was listening to the Brookvale Concerto the other day and I had tears streaming down my cheeks. And yet it somehow makes you feel happy at the same time, which is a bit of a contradiction. Can you explain that? Or is that just me being odd?
No, not at all odd. I watched a little clip of Ricky Gervais talking the other day. He was talking about a moment in some kind of show, I can't remember, where he completely broke down, did the first take and then didn't cry again. But there's he didn't cry again because the letting go of emotion and this overwhelming feeling that just washed over you makes you feel better. It is therapy, isn't it? You're engaging with a difficult problem, empathizing with it, and then coming to some kind of conclusion.
There's a catharsis of stuck emotions, and I think also we are retuned to aspects of harmony in our thoughts and feelings that we had perhaps gone out of balance in. I mean, that's complete conjecture, but it feels right that happens. Peter, you had your hand up, and David.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing, that it feels cathartic. And I'm sure I'm not the only person who gets this tingle down my spine when you have a particularly beautiful melody that evokes certain emotions. And it's quite an extraordinary feeling. I can't think of anything else that does it other than music.
Well, I think sometimes really good poetry or really good filmmaking, weirdly, like cinematography, kind of like has a similar effect. And for me, when I listen to that, I know the title, so this may be colouring my impression of the song, but I did feel like there's something, it speaks of dreaming somehow or another. The way that they've, obviously that's the intention of the song, that's the name, and I presume that's the mood that they went into it to kind of capture. But for me, it just felt quite dreamlike, and it reminds me of, like, you know, times past. I think it was written in the 1930s, but it definitely kind of feels like sort of more of an innocent, dreams of an innocent time. And I love the interplay with the bass. I'm a bass player, like I said, so I'm always listening to the bass and then the melody. I know some people don't even hear the bass. It just kind of disappears in the mix. But yeah, no, beautifully played, Monty.
It sounded great. And do we have another piece of music to listen to and think about?
We have a couple.
David, while you're doing your technical things, Peter, you mentioned spine tingling. There's a phenomenon that, I don't know whether everybody gets this, but you get a sort of fizzy feeling around your head or around your body. It's not the fear feelings, it's the tingles. And for me, that often happens when there's a tension of suspension, a long suspension on a chord, particularly a minor chord, and then a minor descending cadence, which is sort of quite soulful, and it seems to do something quite deep. I can't explain what, but it does. And some people call those truth tingles, and I'm not exactly sure what that is.
Tingles, I've never heard that before.
Monty, you'd know better than any of us, but absolutely, Andrew, one of the great things that happens is music, is when you get that winding up of tension, Bill, you get it with something like Zadok the Priest, where it kind of builds and builds and builds, and then it breaks at the end, and that sort of makes the emotions break as well somehow.
Yes. Rachmaninoff does it every 9 or 10 minutes in some of his piano concertos and pieces. It's huge, huge climaxes and then dying away.
This next song I'm going to play, this is an extract, a 1 minute extract in the middle, very clumsily just chopped in the middle from 1.5 minutes in of one of Monty's original compositions called Wander. So yeah, we'll see where we land. We'll just listen for 1 minute from 1.5 minutes. Here we go. Ready?
Maybe we need to cut a little bit before going into that, so I don't think that solo's comped.
Well, that sounded just great. We started with the building of tension, and there's then a resolution, then off into another figure or another feature, and it was just great.
For me, there was a real melancholy to it in the middle there. And I know we appreciate we just chopped up an arbitrary section in the middle out.
No, that's nice. That's James Storm on the sax. It's nice to hear him playing. But just a bunch of friends coming together to make some music. I mean,
I was going to say, technically, can you just tell us what makes that one, unlike the first piece, was very much jazz. Is that to do with the chord structure? Is it to do with the timings, the percussion?
Which one was jazz?
The one we've just played, Wander.
Yeah, fair. Because I kind of consider that first one more like jazz. I mean, that second one's Afrobeat. But, you know, jazz is so broad now. Again, we were talking about it at the beginning, but like the generations that grew up on the internet, the genreification and the taste of that, the music's just split across into so many genres now that it's very hard to identify what makes jazz and what makes something else. Sorry, was that answering your question? I'm not sure.
I think it answered it very well in saying that I was being a bit stupid trying to classify things. And I'm always against classification. So thank you for saying it's all music and it doesn't matter what label.
Why are you against classification? I'm very interested in that.
I think we do too much of it and I think it limits us.
Yeah. And
And it allows people to take sides, and we spend a lot of effort saying, well, is this an X or is it a Y? And it's just itself.
Classification is the naming of parts to go back to that First World War poem or Second World War poem, and it's dividing bits into its constituent pieces in order to name or divide them, whereas actually it's the connection to the whole that matters.
And we're saying about other things that can move us, poetry. I mean, that one, it ends with, doesn't it, which in this case I do not have. And it's sort of talking about things and then comes to the end of his, one of his arms or legs being blown off in the war. So, I mean, that can evoke emotion as well. And when you get the two coming together, you can get poetry and the music as well. And the combining of the two emotions is incredibly powerful, isn't it? I'm sure you've got better examples than me, Monty.
I just wanted to sort of, because we're moving into the last few minutes, I just wanted to make the point that music probably speaks to something very deep in our soul. And also there's a lot of scientific research that shows that when we play music, we listen to music, or we're often engaged in music, we actually learn better. And so schools that have lots of music in them actually are doing their pupils a service to learn whatever other subjects they're learning, because the music seems to put a level of harmony into the body and into the brain and the mind.
Yeah. We definitely culturally I think there's a big, I'm very biased here, but a desire to go back to just having more music around, just being able to go into a pub and listen to music. We're struggling a little bit, I think, on that front.
And to follow on from what you said, Andrew, with my dementia hat on, can I give a plug for Singing for the Brain? And it does seem as though music taps into something much deeper in our memory. If people haven't already heard it, and I'm sure a lot have, just Google Paul Harvey, who at the age of 80 and with moderately advanced dementia was able to improvise a wonderful piece of music. And it's available out there on the internet if you just Google that. Extraordinary that it can do that. And I'm sure you guys are the same. If you hear a piece of music that you learnt in your youth, you remember every single intonation, even if you've forgotten loads of other stuff. So it sears itself into our brain, doesn't it, Monty?
So glad you brought it up. I cared for my grandpa for a while, just before he died. And my grandma, both of them experienced dementia, Alzheimer's, very difficult kind of period. But the absolute healing power of music was so apparent. I remember I just bought this nice pair of headphones and I was like, oh my gosh, I can hear on all this quality. I bet my grandma's never. So I put on Le Vin Rose. She engaged, but there was always an element of distance. And that was the first time I've seen her fully, just completely, her arms were moving as if she was dancing again. Just fully engaged with the music. And the same with my grandpa. He was really struggling with his anger. Anything would set him off into a very big tirade. And the only thing that would work would be Bob Marley. And
the most chilled music.
Yeah, at the age of 91, he absolutely fell in love with the rhythm. I mean, this is coming from a guy who listened to nothing but jazz and big band, swing, Chris Barber. And suddenly just absolutely in love. And it really took him, because, I mean, that's the amazing thing. Like, we were talking about, you're taken back to a time when you internalized it. But new music can do exactly the same thing to you. It doesn't have to be this thing that you listen to a million times. You can still engage these parts of your brain, even if you haven't internalized it. And then that process of internalization adds more to it.
Indeed. We've got one more piece of music to play, but just before that, I think there's a parallel between in overclassification between music and mental health conditions. There's probably a more topical thing in the news at the moment about we talked before about the DSM and how many mental health conditions are added to the slate every year. And I feel like that's a tool of, we've discussed before how that potentially is a tool of the pharmaceutical industry and other people who are interested monetarily. And actually, music classification, like we talk about, is that jazz or not? Well, I mean, there's about 50 types of jazz.
I love that you asked. Right? I love that you said this.
Isn't the classification of music? I've done some music journalism in the past, and I feel like it's more of a tool used by the A&R reps of bands, yes, and musicians and the music industry itself to try and pigeonhole something to go, hey, do you like this thing? Go and buy this thing over here.
I mean,
here.
You know Charles Mingus, he best bass player. Well, not best player. There's no best. But yeah, he said genrefication was the death of music, and I love this kind of like. The binary question, is this jazz or is this not, or is this classical or is this not, and then the million offshoot questions that can come for that as you build up this metaphysical web of, is it this, no, and you're answering a binary question, and that we experience that in it, basically everything in political ideology. Are you this side or are you this side? If you're not this side, then are you this side? In identity in general, if you're not this, then are you this? And as you were saying earlier, just being able to liberate yourself from that, to experience it all without these. Very strange, very confusing.
This is such a great conversation. I think we could go on for a long time, but we're going to run out of time. I think we're going to have to ask you to come back again, Monty.
We could listen to one more piece of music now, if we do the transcription piece, and then we'll just do a quick outro.
Oh, cool, great. Yeah, this is from an old church tune. We didn't get to talk about religion. I wanted to, because I know... Yeah, the mindfulness element and the meditation all comes from a very religious background, and we often miss that element of music in the meditation.
And indeed, there's some interesting evidence with EEG work showing that the sort of change in brainwaves you get listening to church music and during mindfulness are very similar.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, let's hit transcription two. Might give it a bit of a shorter extract, but we'll have a little piece of that.
The whole thing.
Wow, that's funky. That's great.
Yeah. For people who can't see us, we've all got our heads going and getting
into
were
that. Dancing. Sorry, Monty. What?
Yeah, no, I was just talking about American church music. It's just some of the most outrageous music in the whole world. Some beautiful, beautiful stuff.
And Monty, Corey how Henry do people and find you online? We're running out of time.
Monty.w.music on Facebook is the best way, or Instagram. We can do some links there.
And sadly, we are indeed running out of time, and it's just been great. I think we're going to have to continue this on another day.
Yeah, I could talk forever about lots of these things.
Thanks ever so much from me, and last word from Peter and David, and then last word to you, Monty.
We haven't got time for that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Monty.
Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. The show was hosted by our team of doctors, including Dr. Andrew Tresida, Dr. Peter Bagshaw, and Dr. Kate Staveley. The show was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the NHS Somerset Integrated Care Board.